Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
We're in our Loving One Another Deeply series, and this is session 8. The Reach to Love Well is what the title of the message is. So I just want to do a little review of the verse that kind of got us started in all this. We can put that one up. It's 1 Peter 1:22. This is where we started. There's just a lot to mine here. There's just a lot that we can pull from. Now that you've purified yourselves by obeying the truth, so that you have sincere love for one another, now that you've done that, now that that's the case, love one another deeply from the heart. This is where we started this session in, or this series, and I'll start us with the corporate call to it. This isn't an individual call only. It's meant to be walked out amongst a community that are all trying to do it together. You get better at things when you do them together in the context of community than if we just even go it alone. There's a multiplication. We're bouncing off of each other. We're learning from each other's successes, and we're more attentive to learn from each other's mistakes because it's a corporate conversation. People were making mistakes all along, and we're making and having successes all along, but we weren't as attentive. We weren't paying attention because it wasn't a communal conversation. But this was always meant to be a community conversation, is that you would do it with each other, that you would love one another. It's a corporate thing. It's not just that this one needs to learn how to love well to the person next to him. It's that we collectively need to learn how to love well collectively. And as we go on this journey together, and the more focused, the more overt and obvious and out loud that it is, the better that we're actually able to improve upon this together. And so I just want to say it this way. We're in this together, and that's actually for our good. It's so much sweeter that we would all be looking at these verses and be in this together for this season of time, staring at these verses together and learning from one another and watching, just even as you heard in some of the praises earlier, watching some people's love be expressed in a greater way as time goes on. And we're able to watch it and go, oh, that's actually a lot like that verse in 1 Peter 1:22 that we've been looking at. Oh, they're doing it. Ooh, I could do that. Also, seeing in each other's weaknesses. It's not that we ignore that we have weaknesses. It's just that we don't highlight them, you know, that we don't make them the big issue. But it's really good to learn from one another's weaknesses, to see how somebody does something and go, ooh, I had an opportunity sometime here in recent weeks where somebody did something, and I was really trying to be a student of how epically, horribly awful they handled the situation. I was like, I think under heaven's, perspective, that might have been the worst ways that's ever been handled ever in the history of humans. And I was like, Brad, mental note, don't do that. Just like learn from people's mistakes, learn from people's weaknesses, and don't make it about how bad they are. Just look at it as like, man, these are learning opportunities for me to really try to reach to love well, to love better. All right, so this word sincere, I want to talk about it a little bit because I think it's a tough one. It's a tough one. I think it really does require that we're digging deep and asking God to touch the well of his emotions, the well of his love deep inside to be able to pull on, because this word sincere, it like cuts right through all the fluff. It says that you have sincere love for each other. So let's not just read the verse. Let's talk about, what does that mean? What does that look like? I was appreciative. Cheryl Allen guest spoke at the prayer room last night. And she's a friend of our ministry. She's spoken here before. And she made this point. I liked it. And she was able to pull on her education. She was a communications major back in the day. And she quoted this stat. She said, 80% of all communication is nonverbal. And I was like, I probably heard that at some point, but certainly wasn't remembering it. I was like, if that's true, oh my gosh, we have got to think about communication a lot differently, because It may have only 20% to do with what comes out of our mouth. Luke, it's okay. Only 20% is verbal. I see the love. I feel it. He's flailing around. I feel loved. Okay? 80% of communication is nonverbal. Oh, my gosh. That's like, that means there's a lot. There's like a lot of, most of it. It's here and interactions. And so let's talk about a few of them. Our tone. Our tone. I'm going to pivot for a second. 80% of your communication is nonverbal, you sinners. Now, didn't I just say the same thing a minute ago? Less the sinner word. Yeah. But didn't I say the same thing? Why? Why do I got to be all, like, angry? Like, communication has a lot to do with our tone. Like, a lot. And if we're not careful, we just default tone, whatever that is. And a lot of times it's default tone isn't even default who we are. It's default how our day is. You know? It's like, we gotta be careful about our tone. But if it's sincere love, then I've got to be aware of my tone. And like there's a lot that's said in tone, like a lot. That's a wild thing to talk about love having a lot to do with our tone and the sincerity of love communicated in the tone that we're using. Our motives. Sincere. You can't have sincere love and ill motives, right? Or careless motives. And here's the thing I'm realizing just kind of more and more. We always have motives. Always. Sometimes they're like really good and godly. Sometimes they're just fairly good. Sometimes they're neutral. Sometimes they're bad. Sometimes they're double down bad. But we've always got motives. What if we just start asking ourselves the question, what's my motive here? I was in another situation and something was happening. And I was looking at the situation going, oh, I really think I ought to do this in that situation. But then I stopped and I asked myself, what's my motive? Because I've been preparing these kinds of verse or sermons and stuff. I'm like, what's my motive? I was like, probably to look right. Probably my motive is to look right. I was like, well, that shouldn't be good. That's not, let's not do that. And because I asked myself the question, I pivoted. And it's like, and I feel like I did a better job loving in that situation because I just asked myself the question, what's my motive? That's a really good one. Like that's, I feel like that's a really good stopper. You know, just like a stop sign on a highway. You're going 70, well, it says 70, you're going 90. But you get to that stop sign, you see it enough out, it's like stop and then just kind of reassess for a second. I just think that's a great question to ask. What's my motive? Now, it's tricky because typically, things are moving so fast, we don't have the opportunity to really like think that way. So if we're not thinking that way already, it's unlikely we will think that way. But I want to just start inviting us, like, start asking ourselves a question. What's my motive? Like, what am I after here? And then ask the Lord, like, how do you feel about that? A lot of times it's pretty clear because we can get honest with ourselves. Like, I don't think too many of us are totally deceived and, like, lying to ourselves all day. I think that's not any of us in here. Meaning, when you ask yourself, what's my motive, pretty quickly, you got it. You know your motive pretty quick. But then it's a willingness to yield, a willingness to give up that motive or to pivot it or at least recognize, I do not want to pretend to love someone out of this. This is not going to go well. Motives are just a big one. How about related to sincerity, sincere love, and its relationship to willingness to listen? You know, part of the nightmare around here is we've created such a world that's so busy, we're constantly going from one thing to the next thing. And it's like, if you're not on your way to small group, you're probably on your way home. And if you're not on your way home, you're probably on your way to the prayer room. And you're probably on your way to a meeting, about a meeting. I mean, you just, it's like constantly go, go, go. And what I've found is, as I'm in go, 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 my tendency in all circumstances is not to listen. Because listen will slow me up from where I'm going. And I found it the other day. I was on the way to the prayer room. And I was going to do the 5 a.m. set. I was at the coffee shop and or the gas station. That's not a coffee shop, Brad. Don't deceive yourselves. You get coffee at a gas station. Okay. The coffee shop. So anyway, there was this young lady, and she was just in a, like, you could just kind of tell it was kind of that nonverbal. It was kind of on her face, hard day kind of thing. And I know if I start to engage her in conversation, it's going to be a while, and I'm going to be late. And everything in me is like, go, go, go. And I'm just like, no, I'm just going to listen. And I just let her talk, and she talked for a while, and I think it was helpful to her. I mean, her face made happier signs. But it's just that willingness to listen. But I think that's like sincere love requires that. Like we cannot just have to get that conversation over with and get on to the next thing. And that's from the rush standpoint. From the other standpoint is when we've got an agenda. I think maybe our agenda causes us not to listen even more than rushed. We've got an agenda. I think this. I don't really care what you think. And so we're then not willing to listen to what they think. But there's always two sides to every story, to every idea, to every concept, to every conversation. And if we're not willing to listen, sincerely listen, not just the appearance of listening, your face says I'm listening, but your mind's saying I can't wait to make my point. Like, that's not listening. What if we lay aside our points? What if we don't have points? What if we refuse to have a point until we've heard? And sincere love would say, so tell me, like, talk this through with me. And then to hear them and sincerely listen, willingness to listen. And then out of that, then go, oh, okay, well, I just did learn some things that I wouldn't have learned if I was pushing my will, my agenda. I just think there's like so much of this. We're refined enough. We don't do this overtly all the time, but I think we do it unvertly, covertly, subvertly, the other vertly. I think we do frequently because I think we're just not really that willing to listen, but sincere love doesn't tolerate someone talking to us. Sincere love leans in and listens. I want to do that. I want to do better at that. I want to have sincere love that listens and that has a willingness to yield. That yield thing, it's not just enough to listen. It's listen with the expectation of yielding instead of a reluctance, but maybe I can be talked into it. That expectation of probably I'm going to yield at least some level and maybe all level. In this conversation, I want to be at a place where I can hear and then respond from what I heard, even if it means do the exact opposite thing I want to do. I was in another situation, and it just seems like my situations have been very plentiful since we started this series. Be careful if you take this seriously, okay? So it was another situation, and what was happening in the conversation, I was like, this is what needs to happen. This. But as I was listening and just tried to dial down, I realized this is one of those moments where I just need to be yielded. And I did the exact opposite thing I wanted to do. And in the moment, I was really like, I was really not enjoying doing the exact opposite thing of what I wanted to do. I was really not enjoying it. But afterwards, I reflected and I was like, I yielded and it was the right thing. It was the right thing. Sometimes saying or doing the exact opposite thing of what you want is really what's best, is really what shows love. is really what's helpful. I don't know, this phrase that's been running around in my head for a while now, it keeps coming up for so many different circumstances. And I'm finding it to just be truer and truer every time I'm looking at a situation. You can either be right or you can be happy. And I'm just like, wouldn't I rather be happy? Why do I have to be right? I just find so often if there's two opposing sides about something, fighting for right leaves me having a hard time sleeping. And it's like, why not rather be cheated and be happy? All right, so they think I'm this. All right, so they said that. All right, so this happened. Okay, they took this from me. Okay, God, give me another thing. I'm gonna go sleep. We got all this tension. It's like to be right, to be seen rightly, to be understood rightly, whatever. And it's like, I think if we fight for that, we're totally fighting the wrong battle. I can't remember the last time when I, in a happy heart, chose to be cheated, that a day later I was mad at myself for that decision. I just can't remember a time. Seems like every time that I fought to be right, it's like, no, it's my way. You are wrong. I am right. I can't remember a time that that didn't hurt the relationship, because it always does. I can't remember a time where there wasn't awkwardness as a result. I can't remember a time where there wasn't just angst in my spirit and just a bit of unrest. I wonder if that's the Holy Spirit actually testifying, love one another deeply from the heart. You didn't do it. Now get to experience the fruit of what happens when you do the opposite. You don't get the peace of God. You get the turmoil of circumstance. And you did it to yourself because you didn't love one another deeply from the heart. I'm like, I'd just rather be happy. It's like, I don't have to be right. Why do we even care? Why do we even care? Because it's right. And like, God's going to get dethroned because you didn't fight for that one thing in your life. Like, I'd just rather be happy. That yieldedness thing, I think yieldedness has a lot more to do with love than maybe we've ever thought about before. Yieldedness. Next one, I'm just still on sincerity. I'm telling you, I'm getting messed up on this sincerity thing. Sincerity, our intentionality. I just think you can't do sincere love unintentionally, accidentally. Because that's not sincere. It doesn't necessarily mean it's insincere, but sincerity is going to require intentionality. How am I approaching this? How am I looking them in the eye? How am I responding? How am I, you know, setting the tone for, you know, the conversation? How am I interacting with this person? How? There's just a lot of how. And doing it on purpose. Lots of on purpose how. Because you can't possibly love sincerely on accident. It's going to take, like, purpose. So I think a lot of love of intentional or a lot of sincere love comes down to intentionality. And that's another one of those you got to slow down things. Because just life at the clip that it's coming, we're not going to have time to be intentional. Because intentional doesn't happen on the fly without thought. I remember just as, I don't know, as a dumb little example, maybe doesn't perfectly relate. The small group leader meeting that we have before church, that's what we're at. Amen. Church, thumbs up. Okay. The small group leader meeting that we have, for quite a while, I was putting together the small group leader, what we would talk about in the car on the way here. And it was kind of like, I just hadn't found any other time I could find or whatever. And so I'm trying to come up with it, like, on the way here, and that just wasn't epic. And sometimes the Lord's grace would land on it, but it was like, it was pretty, like, after the thought, or afterthought, yeah. And I just decided, you know what? I need to slate a different time where I'm being more intentional about this. Like, I've got to do this so that I'm better prepared, so that I've got this. And I found some time, and I figured out a way to do that differently. But I just made that point of intentionality. It was just different. Instead of just going through the motions and doing it, like, I was trying to be more intentional, and it wound up helping. I mean, I don't know that it made anything better or worse for those that come. I wasn't even so much after that. I was just like, I just want to be intentional about it. So again, translate that over to whatever else. Like, just that the difference between on the fly and hoping it goes right and just roll the dice versus being intentional. Our reach to not just treat people with our default processes related to sincerity. I think whenever we go into any environment that we're used to, we have some default thought processes. You go into Walmart, you got some default thought processes. You come here on a Sunday morning, you show up at small group on whatever day, you're in whatever environment, you're at the birthday party that you don't want to be at. You know, whatever, wherever you're at, you've got these default thought processes, and I think if we're not careful, we treat people out of it. We treat people out of whatever our default is. Well, if your default is great, maybe you're treating people great. But I think there's a lot of our default process. We're just kind of like going through the motions. And like, I recognize this is starting to get really overwhelming. Like, we're now talking about lots of intrusive things, like motives and tone and intentionality. It's like, oh my, this is a lot. And I am both feeling that as a, this is a lot, and I'm also feeling the invitation to get to a place of maturity where this doesn't feel like a burden anymore. I mean, I'm the more I'm looking at this subject, the more I'm starting to recognize the difference between a mature Christian and an immature Christian is a person that's learned how to do all this. And if we haven't learned how to do all this, we're still in our immaturity. Because if God is love, it couldn't possibly be that we could be a mature follower of Mr. Love and be bad at loving people. Or just be default or be fair. So what if a major, like one of the biggest barometers for maturity is how well we love people? So we've got to go on the journey. To me, I'm not looking at this as like an optional deal. I'm looking at this as a confrontation and going, I have to learn how to love you with my tone. I have to, or I'm immature. I have to learn how to love you with intentionality, or I'm immature with my motives that you wouldn't even know necessarily. But he knows, and I know. And if it's sincere, then I've got to learn how to love you with my motives. I don't want to be an immature Christian, and I think this is like, I don't know if it's the biggest, but it might be the biggest barometer of mature Christian, not sincere. You can be a day old in Christ and have sincere love for Jesus, but that doesn't make it mature. So we're talking about maturity, not sincerity. I think there's sincere love all over the room, and I'm in the boat. But the question of maturity as a believer in Jesus has a lot to do with us learning these lessons and figuring this out and actually doing it. And I don't think there's any way around this except being confronted with all this and just going, bleh. I'm a horrible person on the inside and no one knows it. Please don't let anyone read my journal. Like, oh my gosh, this is really tough. Well, what's a starting point? Because it's about the reach, it's about the try. You know, I mean, you may not get there, but like, it's about just trying. I did this message a long time ago, and I've done it a few times, and the phrase has shown up a lot of times in other messages just because it meant so much to me, and that is, your victory is in your reach, and specifically related to reaching for God. Your victory isn't that you got victory. Your victory is that you were reaching for God, and that's your victory, and you can't control your outcome. I feel the exact same thing for the second greatest commandment as it is for the first. Our victory is in our sincere effort to try to fix this. Our victory, we are winning if we're trying. We are winning if we're looking at it and going, I want to try, I want to reach, I am going to make an intentional point of effort to grow in love for people, to grow in the way I express love, that it wouldn't be a, you know, a light hidden under a bucket. Can't even think of those Bible verses right now. It's in there somewhere, and it says something like what I just said. Basket. Praise the Lamb. And so, like, I don't want the love that I'm reaching for to not have a light expressed. I want it to both be something I'm internalizing and something that's expressed that's becoming more clear and more obvious. Like, I think that's what mature love is. And here's the encouragement today. The victory related to the greatest or the second greatest commandment, the victory of trying to learn how to love, it's in your effort to try. Just try. Really, though. And you know when you're really trying something and when you're really not. The diet you were really trying on and the diet you were not really trying on. There are two. It's the same thing with this. Like, I'm really trying to learn how to love here, Jesus. I really want this. I'm really trying, and I'm really trying to listen to you when you give me little nudges, and I'm really trying not to exit out of this conversation too early. Like, I want to do it. If you will try, you are being victorious. You're winning if you're trying. And he sees that sincerity. So just a couple of points, and we'll end. Some starting points. I'm kind of looking at this and going, there's like a lot here. And this is going to probably take us the better part of a lifetime to get right, okay? But what are just some simple starting points? What if we try to be kind to one another always? What if kindness to one another was no longer sometimes I am and sometimes I'm not? What if we just made a starting point? I am going to show kindness in every situation, every time, no matter what they do. Kindness. I just thought it's still a high bar, it's still lofty, but it's pretty like tactile. Like, I don't necessarily have to be thinking about my body language and this and that. It's like, I am going to try to be kind right now, and then right now, and then right now, and right now. I'm going to try to always be kind. What a great starting point. What an epic, relatable, communicatable goal. I'm going to try to be kind always. I like that. I want to do that. What a great church to be a part of. A bunch of people experimenting with that. The visitor walks in, is like, you guys are all kind, or at least you're trying. Some of you are a little weird, but I can see you're trying, you know. What a great place to be as we learn, as we figure this out. Like, an effort to always, hear me, always. No longer default circumstances get this and others get this. Every circumstance, every conversation, every time. When they come up to you mad, they approach you mad. I had this situation at this summit. It was so funny. It was like everybody else was happy, and there was this one person, and they're like, hey, are you in charge here? And I was like, well, that's a trick question, man. That's just, I think JC's in charge. Let's funnel it through her. Anyway, they asked me, and I was like, knowing what they meant, I didn't want to be horsey and be like, well, really, there's this co-op, and we're, I said, yes, ma'am. And she just came right out of the gate angry about something. And I was like, I said, oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm thinking, be kind, be kind, be kind, be kind. Don't slap, you'll have to answer for that. And I was like, you know, I'm so sorry about that. And I was just everything I could to just be warm to this person. And actually, the warmth, because I didn't really have, the answers that I had were not in any way pacifying her anger. But my warmth was. And it wasn't long into the conversation. I mean, the whole conversation lasted 2 minutes, but it wasn't long into the conversation she was like, well, okay. okay, I don't really like that, but okay. And it like melted her. Kindness. Kill him with kindness. Like, really? And I mean, had I not been getting ready for this sermon and said, well, you got a whole point about try to be kind to everybody, Brad. I mean, I probably wouldn't have been able to do it. But that's what I'm talking about. Every situation, every conversation. What if we refused unkindness as a response ever again? Never again. And when you do it, repent to the Lord and to the person. How odd would it be if we all got in the habit of repenting to one another, not for being mean, but for not being kind? Hey, in that conversation, I wasn't kind to you like I know I could have been. I'm sorry. What a point of accountability. What also giant triple conviction to the person. I mean, that wasn't the intention, but then they're like, I was way meaner to you than you were to me. I guess I need to be kind too. You know, it's like, what if that starts to get in the culture around here? What if we just refuse to have interactions that are short of kindness? Doesn't that just sound right and good though? I mean, that just seems so pleasant and pleasing and excellent and praiseworthy and all those other good words that were in that Bible passage that's in the Bible. Having great grace for each other. So first one is kindness. What about great grace? Great grace may or may not ever be expressed verbally. It's in our thoughts about the person that didn't do the thing we wanted them to do. Great grace. They dropped the ball. They missed the appointment, the deadline, the thing. They let us down in whatever way. Like, but having great grace. Great grace. Not a little. Not holding things to people's account. Not holding things over people's heads. But great grace for one another. Because for sure we're going to need it too. And that we would have great grace for people's failings and weaknesses. See, the thing is, when we're in community like this, we've got opportunity to really see each other's weaknesses. And we all have them. We had them before we knew them. Like, my weaknesses were there before you discovered them. They were already there. But the proximity of our relationship allows you to see those weaknesses in a way that you don't see the person that you barely know's weaknesses. And as we have that opportunity, it's kind of a double-edged sword. One, it means we're growing in relationship because there's a measure of vulnerability. You're even able to see those weaknesses. But the other side of it is now, let's flip it around. As I see your weakness, I have a responsibility to steward that. I can either exploit it. I can gossip about it. I can judge you for it. Or I can have great grace and recognize you are a human person with problems and life and difficulties and conflicts and good days and bad days. And just, Lord, forgive them. They don't even need forgiveness for that. It's just, that's just life, Lord. Just help them. Lord, give them grace. They responded that way because of hurt. They didn't do that thing because of busyness. They didn't this, like, great grace for each other. What if our default thought process was great grace for one another instead of nitpicking? I've caught myself in, I don't know, this past season, like upset with somebody about something. And I, at one point, and I don't know what made me come to this, at one point I went, how many things have they done good and how many things have they done bad? And the list of good was ridiculous. It was absurd. And the longer the list got, the dumber I felt. I was like, you're a moron. You are upset about one in 92 things. You're the idiot here. It's not them. It's you, Senor Dundum. It's you. And I'm like, I'm looking at it, I'm like, this is absurd. that I would even entertain holding something against someone or not having grace, not having, I was like, there's this and 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 this. And that's category one. And there's this. And they're all outstanding. Their qualities are beautiful. Their servant heart. There's this. But this one thing. Oh my gosh. We need to learn to love. I do. Because even after saying this, I'm still bugged by that one dumb thing. We're like, our perspective is just jaded. It's just jaded because the best of us are going to have one dumb thing wrong with us and probably more like 10. The best of us. Why would we harp on that? Why would we give energy to that? Why would we empower that one area instead of giving great grace and going, this is an excellent person. This is an excellent friend, an excellent person in the small group, but this is an excellent worshiper in this church with me, and esteem that. Great grace. I would say in our effort to have sincere love, let's have great grace for one another. Great grace. Forgive each other every time and do it quickly. It's just kind of a sub point of that, but like, don't have unforgiveness. Let's love each other deeply from the heart, and that's just where I want to end. And so worship team, yeah, and Andy team, and come on up. Love each other deeply from the heart. I want to do that. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. I want to do it. And what I'll just tell you from my perspective is if I'm going to do it, it's going to cost me. I'm going to have to lay down being right. I'm going to have to lay down what it's going to cost me to be intentional, because that's a cost. If I'm going to love you deeply from my heart, there's going to have to be an exchange and a cost paid. And I just want to say to you, it's the same for you as well. You're not getting out of this thing alive. It's going to cost you, but it's a more excellent way. This is a more excellent way to be the body together, is that we'd love each other deeply from the heart.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.